This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. We're discussing the challenge of reopening in Orange County and in other school districts across the state of Florida as coronavirus cases continue to surge, what that means for public health and the economy. We'd like to hear from you if you're a parent and concerned about sending your kids back to school. You can tweet us at WMFE Orlando. With us on the show, 90.7's Amy Green, who's covering the story, and Dr. Kenneth Alexander, Chief of Division of Infectious Disease at Nemours Children's Hospital. That's Twitter account again, at WMFE Orlando. Your questions and comments, we'll take them there. Amy, what's the Orange County School Board saying about the reopening plan, and you know, what's stopping them from just not reopening at all if cases are still as bad in August as they are now?
Yeah, well, in Orange County, and full disclosure, I myself am an Orange County parent. In Orange County, parents are being presented with three options. One is the face-to-face option. The second is Orange County Virtual School, which is fully accredited and predates the pandemic. And then the third option is one called Launch Ed at Home, which is the one that the district especially is kind of touting or recommending to parents. And it allows children to stay enrolled at their same schools. Children will be assigned to a teacher in a classroom, but they will be doing lessons at home. This option also allows children to combine face-to-face and at-home learning according to parents' preferences. Teresa Jacobs is chairwoman of the Orange County School Board, and she was very clear Tuesday evening when she said that the emergency order that we have received from the state, that funding is based on schools reopening. And so the point she made during this very emotional school board meeting Tuesday evening was that she has very serious concerns, and other school board members voiced very serious concerns about reopening schools as we're seeing the coronavirus pandemic surge in Florida. However, the funding is based on schools reopening, and she fears that keeping schools closed would jeopardize that funding. And so teachers who are fearful about coming back to school would be faced with potentially losing their jobs, undergoing a layoff. And so Chairwoman Teresa Jacobs and the other school board members characterize this as a very obviously difficult situation. They talked very late into the evening about this and basically began experiencing some technical problems. And so they decided to table the discussion and will come back and pick it up again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.
Right. So, quite a lot to unpack there. And I guess it's not entirely clear what the end result will be, but we've seen sort of what some school districts are doing, a combination of virtual school, in-person learning. Dr. Alexander, in Osceola County specifically, what have they kind of come up with, and how does that sort of fit into the advice that you've been giving them?
Their plan is very much the same, that they're offering the brick-and-mortar school for children that fits best for. And as you can imagine, that's perhaps even a different group of kids that are on the other extreme of complete virtual school. And then, as you mentioned, there's sort of an at-home version that's still run by the bell at school. So there's three choices. And I think the other part of it is that, as I understand their planning, you're not committed to one single plan. That as there is change in the virus, as there's change in what happens in the schools, parents are being afforded a degree of flexibility.
Mm-hmm. We've got a question coming in here. This is via Facebook, and Michelle Paisley Park. There's actually quite a bunch of questions here. I think this may be some questions that have been circulating. But if a teacher tests positive for COVID-19, are they required to quarantine for 2 to 3 weeks? Is their sick leave covered and paid? Dr. Alexander, I don't know if you can answer that specifically, but I mean, are those some of the questions that school districts have been asking you, like how to navigate what happens if a staff member or staff members get sick?
So this is an important question, and it's important not only in the schools, but this has been an important consideration as we've tried to keep our hospitals up and running. Because as you can imagine, exposure and infection occurs in hospital employees, doctors and nurses and therapists, just the way it does in school teachers. And so we have followed the recommendations from the CDC so that if an employee tests positive, they are kept home for 10 days or for 3 days past complete resolution of symptoms, whichever is longer. And by doing that, this ensures that people have cleared their infection. Now, tied in with this is testing. And one of the great challenges we have, especially in Central Florida, is a lack of testing availability. And testing has limited availability for adults, and there's really almost no testing availability for children.
Right. Amy Green, was there any discussion about that in the Orange County School Board meeting, whether the school district in Orange County at least can sort of pay for testing and the cost of that rolling forward?
That's been a very big question on the minds of a lot of parents, and I think that is one of the things that the school board will take up tomorrow morning. Tuesday's meeting primarily was public comment. And by the time the school board began discussing the issues, they began experiencing some technical problems, and they tabled the discussion and decided to come back on Friday and talk about it some more. And so I expect we'll get some more details tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. But Matthew, to Amy's point, even if the school board were able to pay for testing, it's not available. You can't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, some organizations have been able to acquire tests, right? I mean, we have the MLS and the NBA kind of on our doorstep at ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, and they're being tested, right? So, but to your point, yes, testing availabilities can be a challenge. Amy, just coming back to that idea of online learning, we heard a little bit of that before the break. One of the people who was commenting publicly was saying, look, it hasn't really been perfect, right? It hasn't worked that well. Teachers had to kind of work pretty hard to get up to speed on online learning and students too. Amy, what kind of shape is the Orange County School District in now when it comes to online learning? Do you get the sense that they feel like they're better prepared for that coming up to this semester?
Yeah, well, I think, again, we'll get some more details on those issues tomorrow. But we are learning that with Launch Ed at home, parents will have the option of combining face-to-face and at-home learning, which we didn't have in the spring. And then one of the school board members proposed a few ideas. One idea she had for reopening schools was to reopen schools as what she called learning labs. That would be for children of parents who absolutely have to send their kids to school, whether because they're essential workers or, you know, whatever the situation is. And these schools would be staffed by volunteer teachers rather than asking teachers to do what they're not comfortable doing. But at this point, a lot of these things are hypothetical, and it's a stressful situation for parents and for teachers and for everyone, because as we know, the school year is very fast approaching, and a lot of these details still need to be worked out. A lot of the school districts in Central Florida are talking about pushing back the start of school. In Orange County, they talked Tuesday about pushing it back from August 10th to as far as August 31st, and we'll just have to wait and see what's decided on.
What about plans for sanitizing classrooms and keeping them safe? What is the school district talking about there, Amy?
Again, in Orange County, just for example, we're being told that hand washing would be a scheduled part of the day, face masks would be required, and social distancing would be implemented where feasible, although the district is acknowledging that in many instances social distancing will not be possible. In other counties, districts are still discussing whether they will actually require face masks.
Dr. Kenneth Alexander, let me just read a comment from a teacher, Elizabeth Lamachia. She sent us a video of her spacing out her desk 6 feet in a portable classroom. She'll have to have about eight students. She'll be able to have about eight students, she said, and, quote, this is going to be a challenge I'm up for, but a challenge nonetheless. Dr. Alexander, what about spacing in classrooms? How effective is it going to be to keep kids, you know, spaced apart, given the fact that they're all going to be in a room for like 40 minutes at a time?
If we can do it, spacing works. I think there's now a good solid body of data that social distancing and masks used in combination works. Now, if we go to the healthcare setting, because we don't have a lot of experience yet, a lot of data from schools, but if we look at what happens in a children's hospital, what we've learned is that 6 feet apart is great. If you have to get within 6 feet of one another, this is where the mask makes a huge difference. So masking is going to be absolutely critical. And then you mentioned sort of closed spaces. Ventilation and, whenever possible, being outside. If classes, activities can be done outside, outside is certainly the safest place for a class to be.
Right. That's going to be tricky in the heat of summer, though, isn't it, in Florida?
Indeed.
Brandon writes in on Twitter, my son is too young for school, but I'm still concerned about his development. We've only got one friend whom we trust to be safe, and luckily her daughter is our son's age, but I'm worried he isn't getting enough social interaction. Dr. Alexander, what about that? I mean, that's a challenge that parents are wrestling with no matter how old their kids are, right? Whether their kids are kind of getting socialized enough.
This is a huge concern among parents. And, you know, let's be candid. We are social creatures, and our children are the most social among us. That being said, you know, we as a people have come through world wars. We've come through people in bomb shelters. There are children growing up in places that make the adversity that we are facing seem like nothing. So while I agree with the concern for children and our desire to optimize things, do have faith in a parent, as a parent, in the resilience of children. Children will do well despite all this. And in fact, for many children, while we think of educating them at home as a challenge, I'll bet you that many children will look back at this and say, you know, I had more time with mom and dad that year than just about any time in my life, and it was wonderful.
Right. It can be a bit stressful, though, if you're working at home and you're trying to juggle childcare too. I mean, that does not necessarily make for great kind of one-on-one time with your kids.
I agree totally. And as my wife says, we're not working at home. We're at home trying to work.
Yeah. Just back to the idea of how this disease affects children. Do we really have enough information about that? Because, you know, I guess a lot of the cases have been, or the more serious cases have been, in the more elderly patients or the older patients. We are seeing that median age of people with COVID-19 coming down. But what do we really know about how the disease can affect kids?
Well, this is an excellent question, and of course, it's a new disease, so we're still learning. But in the short term, you figure that, you know, this disease has been with us now for about 6 months, that what we're seeing is the vast majority of kids that get this disease do just fine and seem to have no long-term repercussions. There are children who have mild illness who may have some pulmonary function or lung abnormalities that can be something that will last for a period of time, but this is something that happens with even things like influenza. Mm-hmm. There are the rare cases, and that's typically kids with risk factors, probably developmental problems, morbid obesity. Those are the kids that end up in the hospital and have lung problems. And finally, there's this very rare group of this multi-system inflammatory syndrome. This is rare, rare, rare. It gets a lot of attention in the press and so on, but it's very rare. In all of Florida, I think there's only been two or three cases. So that's something we're still learning about.
Right. Kawasaki syndrome, is that there was a rash of cases, so to speak, in the New York area a couple months ago?
Very good. It's very similar to Kawasaki syndrome, but in fact probably 10 times more rare.
Well, that's interesting. And just in the last few seconds we have here, Dr. Alexander, I mean, are you seeing a surge in cases at all at Nemours, or is it fairly steady?
So we've got, we've probably had now a total of about six inpatients. almost all of them. I think we've got two in the hospital right now. For most of them, they've done very well. It's been very mild, and COVID has been an incidental finding. So the children have done very well.
We've been speaking with Dr. Kenneth Alexander. He is Chief of the Division of Infectious Disease at Nemours Children's Hospital. Dr. Alexander, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And we're also speaking with 90.7's Amy Green, who's following the story as it unfolds. Thanks so much, Amy.
It's nice to talk with you.
Still to come, as the pandemic intensifies, so does the need for food banks. We'll talk to FarmShare about a food distribution event in Orlando this weekend. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute.